This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Chris Birchby, a relatively new entrant into the high stakes field. However, in just 1 year of competition, he won nearly $25,000, including a fourth place overall finish in the 2016 FFPC main event. In this episode, we talk about who he has invested in most this year, how he is treating the Colts in drafts with the Andrew Luck injury, and what value can be found in the Jets passing game. You can follow Birchby on Twitter at Chris Birchby. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champion David Hubbard. The winner of the $250,000 grand prize in the contest, along with his co-manager Nelson Sousa, Hubbard tells us how he modifies his rankings in the preseason, whether he thinks Todd Gurley bounces back this year, and more. You can follow Hubbard on Twitter at 208-858-740. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, David Hubbard.
David, preseason is underway. We are entering week two of the NFL preseason action. So based on what you see or what you have seen, what you're about to see in preseason, are you ready to make any significant changes to your pre-draft rankings based on what you see on the field? Or do you think there is a danger in doing that and maybe overcorrecting based upon these guys aren't always going to be going against NFL starters when they're making these plays?
Yeah, of course, we watch every preseason game, try to glean what we can from it, but we try not to let the preseason bias what we our initial thought process. We found over the years when you put too much stock in what happens in a preseason game when a guy's playing against third-string players or something, that it's been a negative result. So we tend to stick with our initial reaction. What we use the preseason for, make sure guys are in shape, they look right like they did the previous year, and that's mainly what we use the preseason for.
On that note, I'm curious because Kenny Golladay actually had a big preseason week one on the field. Now, he wasn't going against starters, but, you know, the two touchdowns are two touchdowns. Are you guys, have you been taking, you and Nelson and Austin and your co-managers, have you seen yourself taking flyers on Kenny Golladay late, or are you guys staying away?
I have not really taken much. I know about Kenny Golladay. I know his talent level, but that situation I don't think favors him this year. And I won't be pushing him up. I've seen him go in drafts early, and the guys that got him late might have a good value there, and they can use the guy, but I take that with a grain of salt. I think in the pecking order, he'll be way down the list of options when the season gets started.
Well, one of the primary guys who is not way down the pecking list as far as how the Rams plan on moving the ball this year is Todd Gurley. Sean McVay takes over as the head coach there. Much more creative offensive mind than Jeff Fisher was. Do you think that, A, does Todd Gurley bounce back this year overall from a fantasy standpoint? And, B, do you think that he gets utilized in the passing game a little bit more under McVay?
Gurley's definitely an interesting guy this year, and where he goes in drafts. Like, I've done my fair share of drafts, and you might see Gurley go in the middle of the second, and then you might see Gurley go in the middle of the third. So I think him being on the Rams one affects the way people draft him, and I think McVay will have a big impact on him. I don't know if it'll be this year or if it'll be next year, but definitely I think the arrow's pointing up on Todd Gurley with McVay there. McVay's going to definitely help that offense all the way around.
David, at certain points of the football guys' drafts, the main event drafts, the FFPC drafts, drafters start quote-unquote swinging for the fences. In other words, they try to take these lottery ticket type guys that probably will not have an impact on their fantasy season, but if things fall the right way, they could have a massive impact on their fantasy season. At what point do you find yourself usually start swinging for the fences and taking these high upside, extremely low floor guys?
I wouldn't call it swinging for the fences. I evaluate each person, each player in the NFL before the drafting season starts. And and what I use, and I go through the preseason to see if the coaches are going to use the guy in the appropriate way. So I don't know if there's a lot of swing for defensive type guys this year in fantasy. I think people that draft fantasy get carried away with that, and when they're done, they have a team that's never going to do anything because their team full of guys that they think swing for the fence picks when they would have been better off taking a solid player at a certain several points in the draft rather than swing for the fence type guys. I was guilty of that when I first started drafting fantasy football teams, and I think that's a mistake when you fill your team full of guys that might not even play. They got a lot of talent, and maybe but again, coaching matters in the NFL, and what a coach might do with a player. I've seen it over and over again.
By and large, Dave, do you think that you're the quote-unquote solid teams, the teams that you draft, not necessarily for these, big-time, high-ceiling, low-floor guys, but when you concentrate on solid players, do you think you've cashed in a larger number of those as opposed to the opposite?
I would say definitely so. I would say that's definitely true. A lot of times the guys that you think have a lot of upside, and you take you fill your team full of those guys, and then your team's just middle of the pack. Where if you take a guy that has a role and they're going to use him, then that's a better way to draft, I think.
Final question before I let you go, Dave. Big news out of New York, I guess, is where the announcement came from in the NFL offices. But Martavis Bryant has been reinstated for the preseason. So he is allowed to practice, play in preseason games, has not yet been reinstated for the NFL regular season. Based on the fact that we still, I think a lot of people think it's a foregone conclusion. God knows what the NFL is capable of. But how are you treating Martavis Bryant right now in drafts? And how do you see the Bryant situation playing out by the time main event drafts roll around here in less than a month?
I think even Roger Goodell will get that one right, and he'll be back playing. I think that's a foregone conclusion. I guess it's some kind of he hadn't done some necessary regulatory paperwork, and that's what's holding up the final approval, but the kid basically has done everything right, so I'm sure he'll be fine. He's another guy that there's a wide range on him. I see people draft him early, and then I see him slide in drafts. He has a wide range in the high stakes drafts I've been involved in. You get in a draft with some guys, and they'll fire him up way early, and you get another draft, and people don't even draft him. So he's a guy like you're talking about, a high floor ceiling. And it just what your personal preference and your risk tolerance are. My risk tolerance can be higher than another guy's risk tolerance. So that'll determine where he goes. But I think ultimately he'll play this year. I think that's a foregone conclusion.
David Hubbard, it has been a wild ride checking in with you this summer. Things are only going to get crazier from here on out. Best of luck to you in the rest of drafting season. And we'll check in with you, see how your teams are doing as you defend the 2016 FFPC Main Event Championship belt. Thanks for checking in again with us this week, man.
Thanks, Walkie. I appreciate it. Good talking with you, buddy.
Thanks to David Hubbard for his input this week. Now here's $25,000 FFPC winner Chris Birchby giving us the high stakes lowdown.
Chris, when you are not playing high-stakes fantasy football, what are you doing for a living?
I'm a founder and CEO of a sun care company. So I started over 10 years ago, a company called Kula. We make high-end organic and prestige sunscreens. I have another company called Bear Republic. We make sunscreens that you can find those in Target. Kula's like Sephora, Ulta, Nordstrom, high-end resorts and spas. So certainly not what I set out to do. It was kind of a funny path. I went to grad school for art. I thought I was going to be a painter. I played professional poker for about 6 years while I was supposed to be letting the paint dry in my studio after grad school. And that was the seed money that ended up starting the sunscreen business. I got into it with just kind of very naively. I spent a lot of time on the beach growing up. My parents, unfortunately, both had melanoma around the same time, caught it in time, but it caused me to
really assess a lot of the damage I've been doing to my own skin. I was living in Venice, California, experienced organic for the first time after moving out from New Jersey, and started up the sunscreen company kind of on a lark. And it really took off after 10 years of hard work. So it was not really an overnight success, but we're really happy with where it is. I've got a fantastic team. We're based here in San Diego, California, and I love what I do.
KulaSunCare.com for anybody who wants to check that out. And definitely, you put in a lot of hard work in that. It has paid off. You put in a lot of hard work drafting and managing some season-long teams as well. And that hard work actually paid off last year. You took $10,000 for placing fourth in the main event in the FFPC last year, beating out well over 1,000 other teams in the process. With so much on the line in Week 16, Chris, tell us what it was like watching the NFL games that weekend.
Well, you know, I remember it really clearly, watching the games out with my family's house, my parents' house out in New York in Long Island, and trying to explain to the whole family and extended family how much was on the line and how interested I was in the game. And all my mom wanted was, you know, helping the kitchen, shopping stuff up and getting ready with the whole family and kids running around for the holidays. So it was a lot of fun, you know, getting some of my brothers and family together to watch the games. Really exciting watching it at that point. I mean, I had a great stacked team. It was really the Le'Veon Bell, and I know Hubbard and Sosa won it. We had the same top three running backs going into the playoffs with the championship teams, as far as Johnson, Bell, and McCoy. And that was where we were able to stack up with the Bell with the games off, you know, similar to, you know, maybe what some people are trying to do with Zeke this year. But it was really exciting, and it was, you know, came down to it at the very end. I made a couple poor lineup changes that I'll always be regretting. I think I started Malcolm Mitchell in week 16. That was a total mistake. I had Stafford and Manning, and I know I think I should have had Manning, but I should have had those other guys had Stafford as well, so I took Manning, and that was a mistake. But it was there's nothing like watching games with that much on the line, and it really takes it to the next level. It's super exciting.
I want to get into something that you had mentioned there. Of course, David Hubbard and Nelson Sousa, who won the main event last year. You guys basically had the same three running backs that you had started and really rode those same three running backs all year last year. And last year, I've said this over and over again, was really the rise of zero RB. We saw so many teams do it in the FFPC last year, and yet you take fourth with a heavy running back squad. And then, Hubbard and Sousa take first with using their first three picks on running backs as well. Do you think that, this year again is the smart strategy to maybe go after those running backs early? Or do you think last year was kind of an anomaly how that worked out?
Well, I think it was a little of an anomaly just because the top tier there was such separation between them and the rest of the field. And because of this, the suspension with Bell, you were able to kind of stack those guys up and just try to play through and get to the playoffs and then get on a nice run. You know, this year, what I'm seeing is, I've drafted a ton of the football guys championship teams already here, and I'm just playing around with a lot of different strategies. I think it is another good year to go zero RB, honestly. I think there's a lot of these top tier running backs, a lot of question marks as far as season long availability and durability. And there's a lot of people that are going in that direction of stacking up on RBs this year. So you can really load up on a top, if you want to go four wide receivers in a row. I just did a draft last night from the eight spot. I got Green, Bryant, Allen, and Pryor to start, and then was able to stack Ware, Gillisley, Johnson on top with then Procise and Jamal Williams, Connor, and Burkhead later on to round it out. And so you can really take advantage, I think, of the kind of contrarian almost, zero RB, which might be this year. I think a lot of people are going heavy on those running backs. That said, I think there's tons of value in the middle rounds for wide receiver this year. There's still, like, if you can get, I mean, Macklin going in like the ninth round in a lot of these drafts, Parker, I think, is a tremendous amount of upside as well with Cutler there as a one. You can really find some potential wide receiver ones later in the draft and load up on some of these running backs early. So I don't think there's one right way. I think there's a lot of exciting ways to compose your team this year. And it's just kind of really getting a feel for the texture of the draft board as you're building your team. And that's why I love contests like the Football Guys Championship, where you can really kind of play around with a bunch of different teams and assortments, you know, over the 2-3 months leading up to the season as ADP, and just really load up on kind of high variance teams for the best shot at that 250,000.
One of the guys you just mentioned was Mike Gillisley, and to get into some player evaluation here, Chris, the initial depth chart for both Cincinnati and New England had who FFPC drafters are drafting as the starters in those offenses at running back, Joe Mixon and Mike Gillisley. They have them both listed at third string. Now, when you look at that and know where Mixon and Gillisley are going in drafts, has that given you pause to maybe slow down drafting those guys at their current ADP, or are you not worried given that this is just the first depth chart release of the preseason?
I think if there's any dip, it's a huge buying opportunity. I'm really loaded up on Gillisley, and not that I'm super comfortable about that, actually, because who really knows? I think for both coaches, it's definitely motivational tactics, and Gillisley was a little injured there, so he wasn't practicing, so they put him as third string, I think. Mixon, you know, after that preseason, I think everyone know going into it, his talent is just off the charts, and they wouldn't have picked him up that early with his baggage if they weren't going to be playing him a ton. And seeing those reports, I love when somebody tweets, Hill's going to be starting for the year. Hill's going to get a bunch of starts. And if there's a draft that night, Mixon falls an additional like six spots, maybe even a round because of that. It's just a huge buying opportunity. And that's one of the reasons why I love drafting so much preseason, because you really want to kind of time that ebb and flow of the news cycle. And as soon as somebody dumps on someone just because they, you know, need to put something up on Twitter or want to get some chatter going, and people start getting down on someone, I just think it's a huge buying opportunity. And Gillisley, well, you know, that running back field is very crowded there. You know, getting any share of that New England running back situation, I think, is fantastic. Blount's 18 touchdowns last year, well, it's going to be hard to repeat. Can't be overstated just how important that backfield can be. And if you can pick him up as your RB2, if you're going a zero RB strategy, and start from there and then pick up a couple of these kind of PPR specialists like Johnson, Riddick on top to kind of balance it out and pick your weeks, I think you're in a great spot.
Chris, you already talked about how many Football Guys drafts you have that you built already as far as roster construction goes there. Can you give us a couple of the players? You mentioned Mike Gillisley that you own a lot this year. A couple other players that you find yourself invested in quite a bit so far this season?
Well, you know, I love the feature on the Manage Your Team on the Football Guys site, where you can go and first, it makes it great for in-season roster management. And that's the only way that I could even possibly manage so many teams here with the Football Guys, and the reason why I love the site so much, because it makes it possible to manage all the teams. But Tyreek Hill. I am so overweight on him. I've got him in, I think, like 40% or something of my teams. I'm trying not to draft him now because I am so overweight on him, but I just love him. Especially a lot of times you can pick him up as like a wide receiver 4 in some of these drafts, especially some of the early season drafts, where, again, in the news cycle, people were comparing him to Tavon Austin and calling him very gadgety, and he's not going to deliver. You know, they wouldn't have let Macklin go. I mean, he's got so much upside there with Hill. And I think that is going to be a ton of value in drafts. Guys that I've been taking, like, for example, in the first round, I've been loading up a lot on AJ Green. I'm often passing over Evans and even McCoy and Gordon and grabbing Green, starting with a couple wide receivers there. I just think that, you know, when you look at where he was last year as far as the leading wide receiver 1, before kind of getting injured there, he's just got a huge volume share, and he's a guy that I feel very confident on. Ebron, I have a lot of him. He's a guy right now that a coach I don't like. He just came out and said he's going to get 6 more than that. But I think that there's just a ton of upside with Bolden out, although with Galladay
kind of really showing up in a big way as a red zone threat. I don't really like that, but I have a lot of Ebron and Rudolph as my tight ends. And then later in drafts, I've just been loading up on these running backs who have the potential to become three down stars if the lead back goes down. And so, you know, there's guys like, you know, Jonathan Williams and James in my drafts, and I try to just stick them on my team as soon as I can get them there, in the hopes that the, you know, they become the guys who are going to win the championship later in the season if something bad happens to the starting running back.
There's an interesting conundrum for fantasy players this year in New York, and that's regarding the Jets, where they just have a lack of, not, you know, just a lack of talent overall on the team, but especially among the skill players. Eric Decker's gone, Brandon Marshall's gone, Quincy Enunwa is out for the season. You know, given the fact that the Jets are not going to be very good, and typically teams that aren't very good tend to throw a lot in the second half to try to either keep up or try to catch up in the game, do you see any fantasy value in drafts this year among their skill position players, the running backs, the receivers, the tight ends? Is there any value there in your football guys' drafts that you've seen?
Unfortunately, I was going really heavy in on Enunwa around like 10, 11, 12, when you could get them there early in the season. I always try to target guys who are going to be wide receiver ones in their offense. Robbie Anderson, I just don't know about him. I do have some shares of him. Austin Seferian Jenkins, and he's just such an athletic stud. He's a knucklehead who hopefully turned it around. And I think guys, when, you know, their agents and family, if they've really kind of got through to them that, listen, this is your last chance. You're an athletic freak. If you can just get your head on straight and concentrate, you've got a couple years in your life to do this. I mean, he could be a total monster there, because who else are they really throwing the ball to? And especially with the quarterback situation, finding a 6'6 friendly target who's, you know, only going to be like 10 yards downfield is, I think, when the rush is coming in, he's going to get a lot of targets. And so I've been loading up on him late. Especially in a format like the football guys with the 1.5 PPR for tight ends. I've been going heavy on him. I just, you know, a lot of people are in on Powell. I just don't see how, you know, what is he, 29? He's never really kind of been the lead back, but suddenly he's a stud. I just don't know. I don't feel comfortable drafting him or Forte that much.
We want to stay in the AFC here and talk about Andrew Luck, because we're starting to get a little bit more clarity as far as what has been going on with his offseason. It sounds like he has been throwing, but maybe not throwing at full speed or full strength so far. The Colts coming out this past week and saying that he should be ready around week one, whatever that means. But as we get more clarity, there's kind of more unknown you know, a to-do list as far as what to do with the Colts pass catchers, T.Y. Hilton, Dante Moncrief, Jack Doyle among them. Have you been shying away from any of these Colts, knowing that we don't really know exactly what's going on with Andrew Luck right now?
I see a huge buying opportunity again. You know, keep on piling on the bad news. Even if Luck meets, if you're getting him, I mean, I'm ball 9th, 10th round of drafts, and you can quickly pair him up with another top flight quarterback to pick in for a couple of these weeks if you need to. I think there's just a big buying opportunity. Doyle, I've been seeing him drop, and I love Swope, but I mean, Doyle's catch percentage, I think it's something insane. I mean, just like he's got the softest hands. It's like 76% or something crazy. He's always catching the ball, and Luck loves that. I mean, any quarterback's going to love that. So I think there's just a big buying opportunity there. Moncrief, I'm not as convinced on his hands. I do have a bunch of shares on him, because he has been falling also. But I would really, I've been trying to scoop up some Luck and Doyle wherever I can. And actually, in Hilton too. I got Hilton on the 2-3 turn of the draft the other day. And I mean, if you start out with David Johnson, and then you can get like T.Y. Hilton and Amari Cooper on the 2-3 turn there, I mean, that's a very solid start.
We had I saw a tweet from Jared Smola from Draft Sharks the other day talking about how he has seen in his FFPC drafts and his football guys drafts that there's been a lot of teams beginning their draft with a Rob Gronkowski, Travis Kelce start. And as you mentioned, the tight end premium format is why we see that. And I've seen that, you know, facilitating a lot of online drafts so far this season. I've seen a lot of teams do that with the Gronk Kelce start. Is this a strategy that you yourself have tried at all this summer, getting those two elite tight ends in rounds one and two?
You know, I haven't, but I'm not against that. It's just, it always seems like it's, you got to be in the 11 at the 12 at the turn if you really want to try to pick those guys up. A resource that I love to use on the Football Guy site, David Dodds, I love his projections for points in the Football Guy's players format. And he has both of those guys around 270 points for the year. Just for comparison, two other guys you can get right at that turn would be like Jordy Nelson and Michael Thomas, who also have very similar projections. I've been loading up on turns like that instead of the Gronk and Kelce. Not to say the right or wrong way. It's just kind of what I found myself doing. However, as I was thinking about it, you can really find a lot more wide receiver value later in the draft than you can in some tight end. I mean, it certainly drops off a cliff after some of these first guys, where you can find some wide receiver one potential guys later on. I mean, there's certainly some tight end value there too, but I've seen it. I think it's great for best ball as far as for roster management. I'm really high on Kelce. I pick him up a lot wherever I don't have Hill. If I get Kelce, I try not to get Hill. If I don't have Kelce, I try to get Hill. I love Mahomes. I hope he becomes a quarterback at some point in the season. But, I haven't used it, but I think that that's it could be the strategy this year.
We've seen another riser coming up the boards at the wide receiver position here over the last, I want to say like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even a little bit before that, but it's really spiked over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and that's Pierre Garçon. He is a guy that, was being drafted in double-digit rounds months ago, after he had signed with San Francisco, and now he just keeps moving on up, and now if you want to draft him in a Football Guys draft or an FFPC draft, you're probably going to have to use your 7th-round pick on him, and in some cases 6th-round, depending upon where you pick in the 7th. With him moving up draft boards, where do you stand on him, Chris? With Pierre Garçon this year, what kind of season do you view him having?
Hoyer is kind of it. I mean, and they're going to be playing a fast-paced offense there, and he is going to be the target hog. I do have a lot of shares of Garçon. I am high on him. But I'm high on him early season drafting, closer to 10 rounds, maybe even 9, and I see him routinely going in. And so if I like him a lot, I mean, I remember back in the beginning of the season, this is really nice drafting in the earlier on, where you could load up on guys like Hilton and Pierre Garçon in 8, 9, I mean, all these guys have a ton of potential and upside later on. So I do love him. I think, I've seen a lot of analysts that he's kind of their sleeper pick. I don't think he's a sleeper pick anymore, as you can see with his ADP up there. I think he's right around where he should be. I think if you can get him, 6th round might be, just starting to be a little reachy, but I still feel confident getting him anywhere like around that kind of turn, around 6, 7.
Drafting season is really starting to heat up as we are in mid-August now. We are less than a month away from the start of the NFL season, and not only FFPC and Football Guys drafters, but drafters everywhere really getting set for many of their fantasy drafts at this point of the season. As everybody is heading into those drafts, Chris, what's some advice that you can give them this year based on your experience, not only in previous years, but especially this season, given that you have drafted so many teams already? What's some advice that you can give them this year that may have not necessarily applied to previous year's drafts?
Well, I think that the number one advice, and this does apply for all year's drafts, is try not to go in with a set strategy and really kind of play the board, find value, and build your team as you're going. Playing a lot of drafts, doing a lot of drafts early, you really develop a feel for the texture of the board and kind of where different tiers and drop-offs are. Just so, for example, when you're looking at running backs, there is kind of a drop-off that happens after Carlos Hyde-ish around, the 4 or 5 turn. And then if you want to wait, then you get kind of into the Spencer Ware, Abdullah, Gillislee, Woodhead, Ingram-y crowd there. And so I feel, when you're playing your draft, you don't want to miss out, kind of get greedy and miss out on your run. If you wanted, if you feel like you need to add a good running back to the mix, you just be aware of where kind of the drop-offs are. Same thing for the tight ends. There seems to be at a certain point of
you know, this kind of Ebron, Martellus Bennett, Hunter Henry Doyle kind of drop off after that. If you, you know, then there's a bigger, you know, gap of a couple rounds where there's really not so much value there to be had, to make sure that if you right near the tail end of that, instead of just it and being, I think that there's a lot of value to the tail end of those, and but you have to be aware of so an opportunity when you run 12, 13 to get a little early on some of these top tier running backup running backs who could become the three down stud. And it's very rare these days, obviously, to have a back stud on a team. You know, guys like, again, you know, Connor, Jonathan Williams, if you can start kind of reaching a little bit and getting them, Jamal Williams, even now, guys like that, it's, I think you're putting yourself in a good position against really big field tournaments. And so instead of playing ADP, I get a little reachy on those guys as well.
Final question, Chris, before we let you go today. I'm curious if there is a guy that stands out to you in the first round, or really the first few rounds of FFPC drafts, that you've been avoiding, that you think is going to be a bust this year, that you would advise people not to draft. Is there that player for you this year? And then maybe a guy that is flying under the radar right now, a sleeper that you have really targeted in the latter rounds of your football guys' drafts.
Looking at my draft boards, I have so little Jordan Reed. It's crazy. I just have been avoiding him. I think guys around him, Jimmy Graham, Olsen, of course, Kelsey, those guys, even Rudolph, just with the PPR and the volume share there, have offer a much safer value. So I've really been avoiding Reed for where he's at. Guys later on in the draft, I've been loading up on like Corey Davis. Again, that's one of those guys where I think it's a buying opportunity right now. He was giving him, I mean, first you pick five in the draft, pick him there to sit him or share time. And they started him right away on the X spot in the practice scene. He was dominating. And if he wasn't injured right now, we'd be getting updates every day of him dominating, and he'd be flying up draft boards. So where he's at right now, I just see a huge value. C.J. Fedorowicz as well, especially with Fuller down. If you look at how he's been trending over the last couple of years, and especially with a you know, inexperienced or rookie quarterback with, you know, either Savage or Watson in there, I think that he's going to be soaking up targets. And he's a huge, what is he, 6'7"? I mean, he's huge red zone presence as well. So he's a guy that I've been grabbing a lot later in rounds as well.
Well, a huge presence in the fantasy football draft rooms at the FFPC and Football Guys drafts so far this season has been you. It's been certainly enjoyable to listen to your advice and what you've seen so far in drafting season. I think that this is going to help a lot of people as they prep for their drafts too, Chris. I wish you best of luck this year in all of your drafts, and who knows, maybe you'll climb up from fourth place over on the main event to first place this year. We'll have to see. Thanks so much for joining the show today.
Hey, it's a real honor to be here. I'm super excited. I'll be out in Vegas for the drafts this year for the first time, so I look forward to getting to meet a lot of the guys and women that I've been drafting against for so long and playing against. It's really a great community. I love being part of it, and I think the FFPC is absolutely hands down the best format, software, and operation running, and you know, happy to be a part again. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.